welcome to the Michael Slate Show. I'm your host, Michael Slate. And our show today, well, the second main segment we're going to be talking about a little bit later, we're going to have a quick discussion with Sansara Taylor from Revolution Newspaper and Stop Porn and Patriarchy. And we're going to be talking with her about the Abortion Rights Freedom Ride in Texas. She's just gotten down there. It's kicking off, and it's going to be a hell of a month, all right? And we'll be doing that. We're going to be following that all throughout the month. But first, we are going to be talking with Alan Goodman from Revolution Newspaper. And we're going to, and he's been writing a lot and covers a lot what's happening in Palestine, what are the questions posed there for people all over the world. Well, I'm very pleased to welcome to the show today Alan Goodman. Alan, how are you?
Well, Michael, I'm angry, and I'm here.
Yeah, good. That makes two of us. So let's jump into sound. As I was driving over here, and I know we talked last night, and as I was driving over here today, and I hear this, you know, you look at the newspaper this morning, they talk about ceasefire. I'm driving over here, and immediately what do I hear? It's broken, and the Israelis have begun bombing shelters, schools, hospitals, and especially in Rafah these days. The attacks on civilians continue just unmitigated, and it poses huge questions for people right now. I think it's really, you know, as I was saying earlier, I interviewed a man from Gaza last week, and as his horror and anger grew throughout the course of the interview, he kept just almost tearfully demanding to know, where is the world? Why is no one doing anything about this? Why is no one seeing what's really happening here? Let's just kick that around a little bit for the beginning.
Well, first of all, some people are doing some things about it, and it's important that we recognize that and have their backs. I don't know if your listeners have heard about this, but there, a number of very prominent Spanish actors, including Javier Bardem, Penelope Cruz, and Pedro Almodovar, the director, issued a strong statement condemning what's going on with Israel's assault on Gaza. And, we should note, beginning but important statements even made by people who, are pro-Israel but for whom these crimes are just, off the charts, including some veterans of the Israeli military. And you had sent me an editorial by, a supporter of Israel who is really saying that this has gone too far. So on the one hand, it's not when people say nobody's doing anything. I think we have to speak about what people are doing, but then we also have to speak about, sometimes when people say that, they're expecting something better from, say, Obama or, the UN or forces who they expect should be speaking out in the context of this, this horrible outrage. I'm looking now for this quote that I want to share from the White House press secretary. Now, I was listening to the show before yours that was, identifying some of the horrors going on in Gaza, but, you have a situation where almost 2 million people have been locked down for going on 8 years now. Food and water almost cut off. 95% of the tap water in Gaza was undrinkable before this horrific slaughter started. People do not have access to the basic necessities of life. Now electricity is off in an area as densely populated as New York City. The electricity was taken out by Israeli bombs. I mean, this is really a collective, massacre of civilians. And then you had an Israeli attack on a UN school. And then you had another Israeli attack on a UN school. And then you had the Israeli attack on the UN school where desperate people had taken refuge in Beit Hanun on July 24th and were standing in the courtyard of the school in open air. So, don't give us any of this stuff about how they were hiding missiles under their jackets or something. They were standing in a courtyard. You can see this in video. We've got a link to the video at revcom.us, where you can see this courtyard. It's like a parking lot. People are completely exposed. And on July 24th, 16 people and 100 injured, women and children and families who had taken refuge in a UN school. And then, 2 days ago, you had yet another Israeli attack on desperate people gathered at a UN school, and where 19 people were killed. And here's where I want to speak to the other side of what, you know, what you were citing, where people are saying, you know, why isn't anybody doing anything about this? Here, let me just read from the statement from the UN, the United States White House, Barack Obama's press secretary. The shelling of a UN facility that is housing innocent civilians who are fleeing violence is totally unacceptable and indefensible, he said. And then he said, we need our allies in Israel to do more to live up to the high standards they have set for themselves. And then he further expanded on that and saying that the Israelis should live up to the standards they have set for their own military operations to protect the lives of innocent civilians. Well, the standards that the Israeli military has set for protecting the lives of innocent civilians is that absolutely anybody, anywhere, doing anything or doing nothing in Gaza is a target. So, you know, then the next question is, and as they were pointing out in the show that was on right before yours, in the midst of all this horror, this wanton massacre of majority civilians, the U.S. is shipping more tank missiles over to Israel to continue the slaughter and presenting Israel as the victim in all this, the ones under attack. You know, maybe we'll get a chance to talk about the role of the media in all this. And that really poses the question of, you know, what is behind the U.S. backing for Israel, which I think you probably want to get into, but I'm just kind of responding to this question of nobody's doing anything. The global powers that be are, you know, are aiding, abetting, enabling, and sponsoring this massacre. People are beginning to speak out and need to be supported when they do.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we can...
Yeah, definitely, and we will. I do want to visit this thing about the role of the U.S. because this is one of the questions that has come up a lot in people I've been speaking with, including the Palestinian I interviewed last Friday night, who also made the point that, you know, he was talking about what he saw when the Congress, you know, uniform, you know, sort of 100-0 said, okay, we're going to support this. There's all these things that are coming out where it's a constant reference to, you know, the sort of. And again, it's part of the media, but it's also what the government is saying, where, you know, the idea when the Obama administration comes out and says, well, yeah, you know, this is not good that they're doing this. On the other hand, you do have to recognize Israel has the right to defend itself. And this man was pointing out that you have this, that it's not just a question of complicity, that in his mind, he said it's also almost to him, it's like, it's direct, it's green lighting. And he made the point that you have the fourth largest military in the world, and everything that they use, all the weapons they use in their genocidal attacks are supplied or furnished or refurbished by the U.S. And I wanted to ask you about this because it is something that you've written a lot about this. You've written about both what's behind this as well as the history of this, of a very special relationship between Israel and the U.S.
Right. Well, I think, you know, there's no way of evading it now. When you hear a statement like that, first of all, the first three Israeli bombings of schoolyards and all these other horrific crimes have been justified by the White House and the mainstream media, including the New York Times, all framed in the context of, you know, Israel under attack from ineffective rockets from Gaza and, you know, just distorting the whole situation. We've got a piece at RevCom that I wrote that just walks through a whole series of incidents, and I can't go into them all here, but you, some of your listeners might be familiar with these. You know, Diane Sawyer ran a piece supposedly showing devastation in Gaza, in Israel rather. The film footage was from Gaza, you know, and then the next day there was a correction issued, but the damage was done. And there's a whole series of these kinds of things, as well as, you know, lies by omission, lies by distortion. We ran a pick cap of a New York Times headline, First Israeli Dies. Well, this was on a day when dozens of Palestinians had died, and people are being conditioned who read the Times to see Palestinian lives as, you know, valueless, essentially. So there's this whole distortion of things, and then there is this, you know, this 100-0 vote you noted in the Senate and so on. And I know this poses a question for people, including, you know, I think some of this is prompted by some of the very, you know, very contextualized criticisms of Israel from the White House, like the one I just read, where, okay, you know, you bombed a few too many school courtyards with children and innocent civilians in them, but, you know, of course, you're the good guys in all this. And this does pose for people, what is the nature of the whole historic special relationship? And this is something that we've written about extensively at RevCom, including in a special issue on Israel that people can find at RevCom.us. But just in a nutshell, you know, historically, Israel is a product of, it's built on ethnic cleansing, and it's a product of imperialism as an outpost for imperialism in the Middle East. And, you know, that's part of what goes into this provocative quote from Bob Avakian that I've encouraged people to think seriously about when he said, after the Holocaust, the worst thing that has happened to Jewish people is the State of Israel. So there's the question of what, you know, where did Israel come from? What's its nature? What's its role in the world? And right now, you know, there's a whole complicated swirl of things going on in the Middle East. And, you know, as the rulers of the United States bully their way through these shifting alliances and, you know, instability and so on, Syria, Egypt, and beyond, you know, they're backing Israel as their most reliable ally in the whole region. You know, the rise of the U.S. empire after World War II and everything since has been, you know, dependent in important ways on that special relationship of their enforcer Israel in the Middle East. Mm-hmm. So I, you know, that in a nutshell is what's driving this.
Mm-hmm. Now let's talk about this. You mentioned earlier about the press, and I want to dig a little bit more deeply into the press, because this has been, they have been really pushing, I mean, a whole way, a whole perspective on this, which, you know, basically, I mean, everything from convincing people that it's a complicated issue, that you really have to understand that there's two wrongs going on there. One's more wrong than the other, but there's two, they're even-handed. Each one's, you know, responsible for a certain amount of suffering, and it's just it's a mess, and really, you know, I don't know how to sort this out. The press has been doing that at the same time, all the time, you know. The way, I mean, I was telling you last night, I looked at the LA Times yesterday, and they had an article about, you know, some horrendous thing that happened in Gaza, and then in the middle of it, in the middle of the front page, they had a picture of you know, a mortuary with three kids in it, and the caption read that it was, you know, Palestinian kids in a mortuary, but then the whole article, big center page article, was on Israel. And how Israel is worried about, you know, the impact of all this on them, and how are they going to deal with all this thing? And the question becomes, you know, here's a force in the world that's committing. You know, when you talk about what the Zionists are doing, they are committing, you know, as Ilan Pappe called it, incremental genocide. They're committing war crimes, you know, beyond question, crimes against humanity. And yet the U.S. press is just going overboard portraying this as, well, you know, you really can't tell who's doing what to who here. Can you talk about that a little? Because it has implications for everything else we've been talking about.
Well, I think there's a lot of dimensions to it, and one of them is just, you know, wildly distorting what's actually, you know, portraying a one-sided massacre by a country built on ethnic cleansing against the victims of that ethnic cleansing as, like you say, a two-sided conflict started by Hamas. But I think there's an ideological dimension to it, or a moral dimension to it as well, that's kind of underlies one of the examples you're bringing up, which is that, and it kind of gets to that New York Times headline I was talking about. It's, you know, one is, first Israeli dies, and then, you know, 16 paragraphs down, oh, by the way, 80 Palestinians died today, and it kind of reminds me of back when the Onion newspaper was coming out in print, and they had a massive headline, one American dies, and then, you know, 12 paragraphs down, Japan sinks, you know, to the bottom of the ocean, and 200 million people died, but never mind that, one of them was an American. And this is the way people are trained to think in America, and by extension, you know, Israelis are like us. They believe in the same values we do, you know, they're civilized people, and there's even racist connotations and dimensions to this, but more fundamentally, there's, you know, these are people who are part of the civilized world. Well, again, you know, the shared values between the United States and Israel include that they're both built on genocide and ethnic cleansing. So, but, you know, people are trained that, you know, we have these special high moral values and that the, you know, we share them with the Israelis. And it's so Israeli lives are kind of an extension of the, you know, American lives. And in opposition to that, you know, at RevCom and other people have brought this forward as well, and it's an important stand to popularize, and I encourage people to tweet it and so on. American lives are not more important than other people's lives. And it's time for people to stop thinking like Americans and start thinking about humanity.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this. You commented in one of the things you wrote that Ilan Pappé's analysis that what Israel is doing in Gaza is part of an incremental genocide, that's a very critical insight. Why?
Well, because it's true. I mean, he, you know, in the interview that you did with him, he goes into depth about how it's time, it's important for people to stop looking at, you know, things in terms of, well, you know, what's the current conflict provoked by Hamas rockets, and then before that it was showing from Lebanon, and before that it was something else, and to recognize a pattern here of incremental genocide. And now, when we are hearing the Israelis say that they're not going to stop the slaughter in Gaza until, and I don't have, you know, the wording right in front of me, but a lot of formulations along the lines of until we resolve the problem once and for all. You know, there are ominous echoes of, you know, Hitler's rhetoric around a final solution. I mean, the whole logic and immorality of what's being argued by Israel and its backers and, you know, in the halls of power in the United States is that, you know, the Palestinians are the problem and that there has to be a final solution, or, well, they don't, I mean, so far, I think they've, their PR people have probably, you know, to the extent one of them blurts out final solution, might point out that's a little, can't you come up with another wording? But there are ominous echoes of that, both in what they're doing. I mean, this is a sealed off small area. Again, as densely populated, I'm talking about Gaza, as densely populated as New York City, water cut off. Israel bombed the electricity. This is not an area of the world where people can live very long without electricity. You know, it's been choking off food and construction supplies for years, and now is created an atmosphere where something like, and I don't have the exact statistics in front of me, but something like 50% of the population are refugees. Well over 100,000 gathered at UN facilities where they should be able to seek shelter and safety, and instead they're essentially sitting ducks for Israeli missiles. So, you know, it's Ilan Pappé's observation is critical because it's true and it's important. Other people are recognizing this, and it's important that people speak out, and that when they do speak out, we have their backs, because, you know, people come under, celebrities and others who speak out around this come under vicious attack, and we have to make sure that they're not silenced.
Mm-hmm. All right, Alan, we're going to have to wrap this up, but I want to know if you have any closing comments you want to make.
Well, I'll share something that, you know, this is, I was going to say off the record, but we're on the air, but I'll share something that I don't have the wording in front of me, but a reader of RevCom.us sent in something along the lines of, from Gaza to the U.S.-Mexico border to the ghetto, people must be free, we need revolution. And I think that's, you know, that is kind of the take-home message from what we're seeing now.
All right, Alan, thank you very much for joining us today, and we'll have you back again soon.
Okay, thanks, Mohammed. Take care.
Bye.